Ariel.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. Did you have a class yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. I was looking for the recording, but...
I haven't sent it out yet, but it'll be out shortly.
Okay. Okay, that's great. I'm in a public place again, so I'm going to have to mute because it's, like, right here is the quietest spot that I could find, and it's next to some loud thing. I don't know what it is.
Not a problem.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello. Brandy.
How are you, Brandy? It's nice to have you on the call.
Thank you. I'm doing okay.
Glad to hear it. We do these classes a little bit differently in that we don't do the Anabakoa, but we just go in right into the Zohar, and we only do two, three, four verses on a day. So the verse we're doing today is Bereshit Day, the first volume, chapter section 19, and it's 220 is where we're starting today. And the title of the section is He Creates Worlds and Destroys Them. And we learned yesterday that the word destroys doesn't mean destroy in the sense that we understand destruction. Doesn't mean that the building is destroyed. You build a building and then you tear it down and it's destroyed. It means that spiritually, when you go down, when you fall because of a mistake, that's the meaning of the word destroy in this section and also throughout all of Torah. But most people don't know this because they read the verses in the Tanakh literally. And they read it in English rather than the actual Hebrew, which would be more helpful as well. So the Shem Yechud Kudshabarifu Ishkinte Bitkilu. Urchimu, Kilu, Liakta, Shem, Yud, He, Bavape, the Yehuda, Shalom, Bishem, Kol Yisrael, Limut, Torah, Mukva, Vayino, Alma, Dunai, Elohinu, Alena, Maseya, Denu, Perene, Alena, Maseya, Denu, Perene, Ue, Elain, Enun, Umit, Gai, Rin, Me, Umin, the Alma, Begin I who na flat Hashem ze'era de Abraham be elef hamisha'a de hu Hashem de ihu hare v'yavesh hare v'bet rishon v'yavesh abayit she'ini. Verse 220 in English. Because of those among the nations of the world who converted to Judaism, the small letter He, which equals 5 of Abraham, fell down during the fifth millennium, which is He. This fifth millennium is wasted and dried up and described in the verse, and the river shall be wasted and dried up. Wasted refers to the first temple and dried up to the second temple. Are there any comments or questions?
Is the fifth millennium referring to our time?
Say again. There was a mix-up.
Okay.
Say again.
The meaning of the fifth millennium. We're in the sixth.
Correct.
Okay,
we're in the year 5776.
Mm-hmm.
So if you subtract 700 years, almost 800 years from 2115, you're going to be at 1450. And then, so it's basically went from roughly 400 when the beginning of the the Mishnah was almost being ended, but the Gemara had not really started from there until 1450. That's the time period of the fifth millennium.
Okay.
And during that fifth millennium, the second temple was destroyed just at the beginning of it, just before it started. And then the fourth millennium, you had the destruction of the first temple. And both of them were in the fourth millennium. But what happened in that period from 400 to 1400 was the Dark Ages. And that's what the Zohar was saying. Even if you believe the academics, it was said in the 1100s, that was the forecast in the period that it was in, that it would last another, 200-300 years from the time the Zohar was written. And what is the essence of the Dark Ages? In the Arabic world, it was not the Dark Ages. But in the Eastern world, in the Ashkenazi world, it was. And even though it was lighter in the Arabic world in that millennium, it still had other issues that have always been with the Jewish people from the destructions of the temple. Because as long as we hold hatred in our heart, hatred for no reason, as long as we think when we hear of a horrible event and we think better them than me, we have hatred in our hearts. And until we remove that, we're going to continue, God forbid. Although this year, the energy of this year, we have the ability to remove that hatred. But we have to work on it. It's not something that just happens. You can't stamp your fingers and God is going to come down and take hatred out of your heart. There is a prophecy that he will remove the stone of our heart. He will soften it. But it's not up to God. It's up to us. That's really the message of the length of the exile. It's not being taught by the rabbis, but it is being taught by the Kabbalah. I need to follow up with or to
okay,
listen to
well, I wanted to make another point, and it made me wonder if the way the different countries are coming, well, I've got a lot of static. The way the different countries are taking in the refugees in Syria made me wonder if that wasn't their opportunity to do teshuvah for the years that they turned away those that were from the Holocaust time. And I don't know, I just felt like it was a good thing happening at this time of the year and maybe showing a turn in the hearts of people in general, especially at this time, the 10 days of awe. And
I appreciate what you're saying. The question is, what's the root of those souls? I'm of the opinion the root of those souls come from the Jews that were given authority over the other Jews in the camps. I think they're called and so they treated their brothers incorrectly, and so now they're reincarnated into an environment that's so horrible, and you can't believe the governments of the world are handling it this way. And the result is, 14, 15, 20 million people moving? Well, how many? There were 6 million Jews killed. How many capos were there? 1 million? So mixed into them is that reincarnation, in my opinion. Now, you know, it's hard to know. You have to really know history well in order to see it. And the secular historians, there's very few historians that truly look for Hashem in the cycle of history, in the process of history. But that's where he's being, one of the places he conceals himself. Ariel, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. I would like to know why at the beginning of the verse it's attributed to the converts of Judaism that caused these things to happen, the river to be dried up and you know, the wasted and the dried up temple that, you know, referring to the temple.
When the first redemption took place, Moses left with 3 million Jewish people, not Jewish people, children of Israel. 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 50 or 55, those who could bear arms. Each of them had a wife. That made 1 million too. And how many children did each of them have? The Egyptians were complaining about how fast the Jews were growing. The children of Israel were growing. So the typical minimum assumption is 2.5 children for each family. That doesn't count any of the older people as well. So there's somewhere between 3 and 4 million people who left Egypt. And that does not count what we refer to as the Era of Rav. God, in the Midrash, God told Moses, don't take these people. And when they infected the children of Israel with a desire for another God, another channel to the Creator, and because they thought Moses was dead, and they had another ulterior agenda of reincarnating their grandfather Levon, or maybe it was their great grandfather Levon, they caused a lot of consternation, a lot of walking in the desert for 40 years. And that repeats itself. The Zohar says in our generation, the rabbis come from the era of Rav. They're looking to be honored. They're looking to get the honor of a rabbi. They're looking to build up big synagogues, important buildings, and have their name on it. This is an indication of one of the levels of era of Rav. So when the verse is saying, because of those among the nations of the world who converted to Judaism, the small letter He of Abraham fell down during the fifth millennium. It's talking about the era of Rav over the centuries, who Moses did take out because in the long run he perceived, according to the Midrash, that the process would be shorter. Because if we do it right, we don't have to experience 3 and 4 more 7,000-year periods or 5 more 7,000-year periods. So that's why he chose to take the era of Rav out. And it caused the length of our exile. Now, perhaps we can change it so that we don't have to experience it. But ultimately, the era of Rav are converts. They're Jews who are not yet, they're children of Israel who are not yet as corrected as the level of the children of Israel. So this verse is not referring to modern day converts. It's referring to the era of Rav who came out of Egypt with the children of Israel. They were forced to walk in the desert with the children of Israel They were forced to walk outside of the clouds of glory. This was part of their tikkun, their effort, their pain, their suffering, in order to cleanse them. But many of them were not cleansed. Many of them gave up. It would be one thing to see God's miracles in Egypt, but to have to do the spiritual work at the same time, even if it's a physical walk, even if it's living in the desert for 40 years. No, their food wasn't provided by from the manna. They had to find that food in the desert somewhere. They had to go into towns and leave the community and walk into towns and buy food, or arrange to have it brought out to the desert camps. It wasn't an easy process, and it's not complete. There's still Erev Rav among the children of Israel today. So I hope I've answered your question.
Yes, and I thank you.
Are there any other questions before I go on? Verse 221. God fo dishkinta befashil taha wo meilen tit periu behashem behav behon at Hashem di Avraham garmu leya yurida. Kada alech red ki shichet amcha begindela kavilu leat Hashem bidchilu diyud uvirchimu de Hashem nachet ihi midargeya dehuva. Moshe wanted to bring the proselytes under the wings of the Shekhinah and presumed that they also were drawn down from Malchut, that is sweetened by the attribute of mercy, which is the small hay. Thus he drew down the Mochim of this small hay of Abraham. The proselytes brought upon him dissent, as it is written, "Go, get you down, for your people have become corrupt," which means that they caused the nation of Israel to sin with the golden calf. They did not receive the mochin of the small hay, in awe of the letter Yud, of Yud Hey Vav Hey, with love of the letter Hey. So he descended from his grade, which is the letter Vav. Questions or comments? No questions?
I'm not sure I understand. Then he drew down the mochim of the small hay. I mean, I know mochim means brain.
It means brain, but it also refers to the upper three sephirot.
Okay.
Moses. Well, Avraham was drawing down the brain, the upper sephirot, as best he could. In our world, we don't have the upper sephirot. We only have the seven lower sephirot. But our work is, how do you prepare the world to receive God? Well, we cleanse it. Well, what does that mean? It means that you cleanse it of the negativity, and therefore you can bring the upper three sephirot down to receive God in this world. When the brain, the upper sephirot, are received in this world, that's when it's a complete structure of 10 sephirot,
And that's when the Creator will come down into this world. So that is really what is being spoken about here, when it did, which means that they caused the nation of Israel to sin with the golden calf. And thus, the nation of Israel did not receive the mochin of the small hay. The small hay is the physical world. Where is the mochin of the upper sephirot, the upper three for the physical world? Where do you think it is? Abraham, what does it mean that Abraham crossed over? He's called an Ivri, meaning he crossed over. And I've taught this a number of places and hinted at it in more. Abraham was able to cross over from the physical to the spiritual levels, which is where the Mohin of the physical world is in concealment. And he would go up there and bring it down. And there are still people doing that. They're called Kabbalists. Moses did it. But he stood up on his 120th birthday and made the statement in the Parasha of Vayelech that you'll read on Saturday. I can no longer go out and go in. It's one of the earlier verses in the Parasha. What does it mean? Well, you can say it means that I can't come out of the tent and go back into the tent, into the Moel, to the Mikdash. Or it can mean that I can no longer commune with God. Or it can mean that I no longer can travel out into the other dimensions through astral travel and return. You choose what it means. This is our Torah. It's up to you how it reads. What is the consciousness of it? There's an infinite amount of physical worlds and physical dimensions. Which one are we in? Which one is the primary one that manifests continuously? It's up to your consciousness. Your consciousness, the other person's consciousness, my consciousness. That's why we read the Zohar, because it helps us understand this. It helps us make this connection. The Mohin of the small hay is the upper sephirot of the physical world. And what does it mean to be in awe of the letter Yud? And that the letter Yud has love for the letter He. What is this all about? Any other questions, or have I confused it completely? Bacha, I assume you've had to get off, right? At least get an answer. That's okay.
I'm thinking. I'm thinking because when you talk, I get pictures of something that I remember from past lessons or something I know about the letters or, that kind of thing. And so it kind of waddles around in my head, which means I'll think about it the next day. I'll come back and I'll reread it. I just wait until you make some comments, and your comments, if we don't have questions, just your comments sometimes trigger a little bit of something else. So I hope don't just wait for our questions.
The reason I wait for the questions is without a question there's no vessel to hold the light of what mm-hmm. I'm saying. So I always wait for questions, although sometimes I've been known to make comments because I was about to, before you asked this question, I was about to make a comment about what is the meaning of the Mohin of the small hay. So your question was very apropos.
Okay, good. So teaching the letters of the alphabet you know, yet as a, we call it the itty bitty letter, but how important it is because it's a part of every letter. And I mean, it even stands on top of Lamed, which is the tallest one, and it's in the Tetragrammaton. And those are the kind of things that grow through my head when it says the odd, the letter Yud, you know.
I wasn't sure that the Yud was on top of the top the letter Lamed. I thought that was above.
Well, I think every letter has that little dot on the end, which is considered to be a yud, you know.
It's there, and, yes, you are correct.
You know, and then I make that story with the kids of how they couldn't find yud on the day that God wanted to create them, the world, and had to go looking for him. It was because Lamed had been calling him names like Peanut and Little Guy, and and he was unhappy, and Hashem had to come and get him and talk to him and tell him how important he was and, you know, all things like that. So all those things rushed through my head. You know, it's years of being with children and trying to get things across to them. But you can go on. Thank you. That was a good explanation.
No problem. We'll just do this one last verse, 222. The Sitra, the Elaine, the Itmar, the Honki Shamayim Ka'ashan, Nim Lahu, Wigomer, the Elaine, Inun, Tilaba, Noah Rahame Alaihu, the Itmar, the Hom Gaimahu, Minaret. Begin to have a male. Deep marble home team et seker amalek. Umoshe la istamar. Benai hu viapel. Hashem benai hu king. Dai hu vayeo. Learat Israel. Adiyoto Hashem diatra Uginda nafat Ihumidargeya Benachet Beya Valduginda Hashem Nachlat Weyokun Laufav Demoshe.
So the letter Vav of Yud-Heh Vav-Heh came down together with Moshe to guard him so he does not perish among them. Because according to the secret of reincarnation, he was destined to mingle among the mixed multitude, which is the Arab Rav, in exile, whose souls originated from the aspect of those of whom it is written, "For the heavens shall vanish away like smoke." These are the ones for whom Noah did not plead for mercy. And about them it is written they were destroyed from the earth, because they came from those of whom it was said, "You shall blot out the remembrance of Amalek." Moshe did not protect himself from them and dropped the small hay among them. For this reason he did not enter the land of Israel until he brings the hay back to its place. This is also why he fell from his grade, and the letter Vav of Yud-Heh Vav-Heh descended with him. Because of this, the letter He fell down, and the letter Vav of Moshe shall raise it up. This is a very esoteric verse. So, do you have questions?
When he
probably
fell from his grade. Oh, excuse me.
No, it's okay.
Okay, I was going to ask, when he fell from his grade, was that referring to when he struck the rock instead of speaking to it?
Yes.
Okay.
And then another question is, like the obvious one, why did he not, if he could, if he knew the technology and he knew how to protect himself, why did he not protect himself?
When the golden calf was built, they needed Aaron the Cohen to energize it. They could not do it themselves. So they handed him the gold. All Aaron had to do was tell them to put it on the ground. And then he could pick it up, and it would not have worked. Why didn't Aaron know what to do? Because when it's your tikkun, it's concealed from you. The right answer is always going to be concealed from you when it relates to your specific tikkun. Otherwise, it's too easy. Moshe knew, but at that moment, the information would have flown out of his head. Moses knew, but at that moment, he would have forgotten it. Moses knew, but at that moment, it was up to him to make the right decision without the information. We study Torah. We get all of this wisdom, and you hear me spout this wisdom, and I have no idea what I'm saying. The truth is, you draw that information through me. I have no idea what I'm saying. I can't remember it after I said it. And I have no idea why I'm saying it. But I know you, by asking the question and by you having the desire for the information, you draw that in through me into the public arena, through the revelation. But that's not my tikkun. It's my sharing. It's my spiritual work. But it's not my tikkun. If it was my tikkun, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't have any idea what I should say to you as you ask a question. Just to say, this is what I think. This is what I hope. This is what I think is the right thing to be saying. This is the right thing to be doing. When it's my tikkun, I do not know what I'm supposed to say, do, or be. Just like anybody else. If it's your tikkun, it's going to be concealed from you. Otherwise, it's too easy. And always remember the spiritual rule. If it's going to be easy, they'll have somebody else do it, where that thing will be hard for them. Because this world is not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be an effort of growth. Why is it an effort of growth? Because Hashem wants to share more. The vessel has to be larger. Why do you think the planet Jupiter is the only planet? I shouldn't say that, but it's one of the most notable planets where we see it grow every year. The width, the density, everything grows in Jupiter. What's the name of Jupiter in Hebrew? It's Tzedek. It's justice, righteousness. Only as you grow is there more room in your vessel for Hashem to share. So you can say Moses knew, but he wouldn't have known if it was his tikkun, as it is described in this verse.
I wondered if he was just taken for granted that the Tetragrammaton or Hashem was with him, because the past verses that I don't know, they describe the sword as each part of it being labeled with the Tetragrammaton. And so when you first read the first few lines, I thought, well, maybe he was just taking for granted that sword was with him. You know, then of course, as you read on, well, it was a little bit different, but...
Well, my perception, I could never say that Moshe takes for granted. Hanoch takes for granted. It's one of the tikkun for Hanoch, to remember to be appreciative, to thank Hashem. When I say a blessing, my consciousness is usually not appreciating Hashem or appreciating what Hashem gifts me. Hanoch, it's easy for him to take something for granted. But I can't imagine that Moshe took anything for granted. That's really the nature of the Kabbalist. The nature of his desire to receive is he is unified, his unconscious with his conscious. And what does that truly mean? He doesn't say a speech where he starts the first syllable and the rest of the sentences follow, and he has no idea what he's saying. That's not a Kabbalist. Kabbalist is conscious of everything going on in his environment, his body, his soul, his different levels of consciousness. He's aware of these things. He doesn't do them robotically like human beings. This is what makes him a Kabbalist. So I don't see Moshe taking it for granted. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably my choice of words. I would have thought that because of all the miracles and everything that he went through from the Exodus of Egypt, and, you know, that he would just sense that Hashem was with him. And
Hashem
more
is,
that I
meant. Hashem never leaves us. We leave Hashem. And what happens when we leave Hashem? We get into chaos. And what happens when we get into chaos? That's when you know the Midrash, where the guy goes up to heaven and he sees his whole life before him, and he says to Hashem, you know, when times were tough, I only saw one set of footsteps. When it was easier, both sets of footsteps. Where were you when our times were tough? And what's Hashem's answer? I was the one set of footsteps. I was carrying you. Hashem is always with us, but Hashem has set up a contract with the vessel. And what is that contract? You have to earn what you receive. You have to remove bread of shame. Moses knew that Hashem was with him, but how does Moses remove bread of shame? How did the Tzaddikim remove bread of shame? When Moses Feinstein died in the 40s, God forbid, Moses Feinstein was the known leader of the generation in America after the war. All of these great rabbis were killed in the Shoah. Some escaped, thank God. But Moses Feinstein was recognized as the leading rabbi in America. And after he died, the family is sitting Shiva, and this old woman, I'm going to say not little old woman, this old woman comes to the house and asks to speak to Rabbi Feinstein. And they explained that he passed away. And her response was, so now who's going to listen to my stories? Now, what is the point of the story? Why am I telling you this? When the children of Rabbi Feinstein questioned the woman, they found out that every Friday night, Friday afternoon, when you're pressured to pray, you're pressured to prepare for Shabbat, this woman would come by and he would sit for an hour, for 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours, listening to her tales, her story, what was important to her. Why did he do that? Later in his writings, they came across a statement of what it was. She was a tikkun for him. He needed to listen to her. He needed to take the time out of the preparing for Shabbat for 400, 500 people in his synagogue to listen to this old woman tell her tale of woe or happiness, whatever she wanted to talk about. He was there to listen. Every person in this world has a tikkun. What it is different for each one. This verse is saying, yes, the Vav came to protect Moshe. Why the Vav? Because Moshe had connected to Zeron Pin. He was in heaven on earth. His consciousness was heaven on earth. And as such, he still did not follow God's directions about hitting the rock. Because all the protection shield does is allow you to get past the stumbling blocks that keep you away from the position of the decision that is your tikkun. But at that moment, you will never know what your tikkun is. Otherwise, it's too easy.
Can you say that again?
Probably not. I'll try.
Yeah, say that part again.
About the story of the old woman and Rabbi Feinstein or something?
No, not that part. The part about our tikkun and the connection that Moses had, his consciousness that he had was heaven on earth, yet he still didn't follow the instruction. And so the tikkun is there. How did you say that? The tikkun is there, or the tools of Kabbalah, or help us to put away or to take away the obstacles, but then we still have that tikkun. Is that what you're saying? Something, I don't know. That's what I was understanding, so that's why I wanted you to say that again, because I'm not clear.
No, I understand what you're not clear about. So I'm going to come at it from a different direction.
Okay.
What do you think happens with astrological influence? And the statement the rabbis say in the Talmud and throughout the centuries, that astrology impels but does not compel.
Mm-hmm.
Astrological influence just moves you from one situation to another, from one driving in the car home at that particular minute when next to you in the other lane is another person driving home at that particular minute. And if you were a minute later or a minute earlier leaving work, you wouldn't connect with this person. But you have a tikkun with this person. So you don't realize it, but you're exchanging energy. You're making tikkun. You're elevating spark. All different metaphors to describe what's taking place. Earning the light. Removing bread of shame. We have to get to where we need to be to achieve our tikkun. That person has to be around. If we miss the appointment, either through a stumbling block, through somebody calling us that filtered through because we don't have the merit to achieve this tikkun this year, this moment, this time. We haven't earned it. But we're programmed in the plan of creation that this is an opening where we could have achieved it if only we hadn't made so many mistakes. So the stumbling blocks are put in our way. The protection shield keeps the stumbling blocks from stopping you from getting to that moment in time where you have the opportunity to do the right action. I hope that's made it clearer.
Yes, it did. And I have a follow-up question, because I've heard you say for the couple of years that I've been studying with you about these 10 days, and you say repeatedly and in your emails that I don't have the exact words, but what you do this week, you're planting seeds for the year. And for the longest time, I understood it one way. And then this morning when I read that again, I'm like, oh, this is...
You understand it differently.
Yeah. And it's what you've said about building the vessel and earning the merit, right, to achieve the tikkun for the upcoming year. Is that correct? Or no?
The answer is neither yes nor no. It's both. Today was Thursday. The actions you did this Thursday will impact, become part of the astrological influences for every Thursday. If you did additional effort, it will make it easier for you to achieve your tikkun. Let me give you an example of a tikkun. I've done this in the basic class. So I know you've heard this, but we all forget. You go and you're walking across a park, and there's a tennis court on it. So the different ways that it could happen is somebody could call out to you, "Do you know the time?" And you have nothing in your hands, and you have no appointment to go to. But the tikkun would be released when you said, the time is XYZ. Or there's another possibility, another movie in the cinema multiplex that says you're walking across the park and somebody says to you, "Can you please pick up the ball that we hit over by accident?" So you go off the path to throw the ball back to them. And at that moment, the person who needs to ask you the time walks by and doesn't see you, so he doesn't ask the question. And the opportunity for doing the tikkun is gone until the next time. The actions you do in this Thursday will make the first scenario happen and protect you from the second scenario. But you don't know of which one. You don't know which movie you're in. You're not in control of this whole thing. So you have to go on trust. You have to go on belief. You have to go on faith. You have to go ultimately on certainty. That's the meaning of Moses and Aaron falling on their face in the desert. They fell on their face to connect to Hashem, to build their certainty that whatever they decided to do would be correct. And then over the centuries, that's come to be a different understanding. It's come to be that if it happens in the physical world, then it is the correct action. Well, how can I say that when the guy called me over to throw the ball across the tennis court and I missed the opportunity? It doesn't matter what my decision is. What matters is that I be brought to that place where I can make that decision without the stumbling blocks. And that's what Torah study helps us achieve. That's what additional spiritual work helps us achieve. And every time we do an Avera, we create an angel, just as when we do a mitzvah, we create an angel. But the Averot, the angels that we create that are negative, they're hanging around trying to make sure we don't get to the right place at the right time with the right consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way you achieve your tikkun.
Okay.
Any other questions? Have a beautiful evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
Remember, this evening is Friday, and it will impact every one of the Fridays of your life in this next year.
Hi, Nick.
Yes.
Do you have a class tonight?
Yes. Tonight is 7:30? A longer go home. That's at 7 o'clock.
Seven. Okay. Thank you, Hannah.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Shalom.